You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, September 2nd, 2011. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow, the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, I am back live. Live! Having weathered the tropical storm, Hurricane Irene, just barely. Was going to go to the beach. Didn't go to the beach. Ended up taking the brunt of the hurricane upstate. Apparently the beach was great. It was beautiful there. We had no power for 2 days. Got a chance to be reintroduced to my family. I would not recommend it, ladies and gentlemen. Not recommended. Today on the program, the great Cliff Schechter, the dubious Chris Rosen, your phone calls, your IMs, and a bevy of stories in this age of austerity. But first, allow me to play the Cliff Schechter theme song.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC.
Ladies and gentlemen, that song may have to be amended to include nationally syndicated columnist up to, let's call it 1,000 papers. I mean, once you get above 800 papers, what's the difference? It's really, it could be millions of papers at that point. Cliff Schechter, welcome back to the program and congratulations.
Thank you so much, Sam. I now feel like I'm almost up to the level of the normal guests you have. Like, I kind of felt you were slumming it with me on Fridays.
I'll tell you something, 900 papers around. I didn't even know there was 900 papers left in the world, frankly.
I'm not sure there are. I still think it may just be a trick. They claim there are, and they say that, you know, I'm not guaranteed being in every one of them, but I'll be in a lot of them, and I can be in up to that many. So, and of course, with the Sam Cedar Majority Report Army, if I find out of any of them not publishing me, we'll send all your people there to harass them to carry my column.
We're not so much an army. We're more of like a paramilitary at this point. We're working our way up. Yes, we don't issue any uniforms or any standardized weapons, but we're like a paramilitary, like a bicycle gang, like a gang of bicyclists.
You're kind of like the S&P. If people piss you off, you just kind of downgrade them.
That's right. We're like those Friday night bicyclists in New York City. They still do that here?
Oh, yeah, the critical mass.
Yeah, critical mass. That's more like what we are. We get in front of the traffic. We wheel around. Well, what better way to start this segment with you, now nationally syndicated columnist, than to discuss your most recent column on basically, well, let me, government programs for me, not for thee. That's why you're a syndicated columnist, because you dip into that little Shakespearean prose.
a life spent with way too much money on education. It's not necessarily practical, Sam. As you know, because you were going to be a lawyer.
I was. I am still on sabbatical, still debating. It's been, I guess, yep. 20 years now and that I've been on sabbatical.
I'm trying to catch you. I'm on sabbatical from my PhD program for about 5 years now. So I'll get there eventually.
Oh, yeah. You got to get up. Like, if it's not double digit, it's not really a sabbatical. I'm just now sort of recovering.
I'm an amateur next to you, Sam. I do realize that. I'm trying, though. I'm trying.
So let's talk about this. I mean, you know, one of the things, I mean, I wasn't completely in touch this week for a couple of days. I had no power, and, like, the cell tower was out, so I couldn't even read on my phone what was going on. But there was some griping and moaning about how the media overplayed Hurricane Irene. There was, in the county next to mine, 9 people died.
Wow.
As of just like yesterday, there were roads, there were towns that were still cut off in the Catskills. So much rain and wind, it was an incredible amount of devastation. And people need help there. And of course, if you're a Republican lawmaker, you basically say, "Well, we're not going to give it to you."
Right. Well, you know, and again, like, some of the stuff came out even after my column, which makes me even more outraged. But what's perfect about talking to you on this show is that you can only fit so much into, like, a 750 to 850 word column, you know, on this stuff. Whereas the truly ridiculous nature, you know, we talk often about, like, the frog, you know, boiling, where you get to, you know, it doesn't know that it's happening until it's boiled, I guess, is the horrible metaphor we all use. But, you know, over the last 10 years plus, really since 9/11, but really since Bush came in, you know, we've seen sort of much of the character, in my opinion, in this country just be hijacked by a fringe that not too long ago, 30, 40 years ago, were written off by people, many people as kooks who, you know, were dangerous. And now they've taken over a party. And we've discussed that before. It's nothing new. But just the level to which sort of, you know, because I often do this as a psychological analysis. These are people that, you know, Larry Craig hates gays, and then you find them tap dancing in the bathroom. You know, that the level of psychological projection. And I think it really happens with the spending, too. They hate people. And it's in a way like these guys need spending to bail themselves out personally as well as professionally. You know, Rick Perry hates the stimulus, but he takes a huge chunk of it. Was it $1.974 billion, whatever the number I had in my column, to bail out his own misdeeds and stupidity with all the tax cuts and other things he did in Texas.
$17.4 billion in federal stimulus money that the according to the Texas Tribune, you write. Through the second quarter of this year, they have used $17.4 billion of that stimulus money.
So I was only off by like 14. Well, I should probably reread my own column before I go on your show.
Well, I mean, it's an extraordinary amount, and $8 billion of that money was used to balance its last two budgets.
Right. So, I mean, that obviously is utterly ridiculous. And, you know, but he hates the stimulus. It's terrible. And you'll find, I think, 100 more examples as time goes on of his doing the same thing. And with Bachman and the $260,000 for the family farm and the $30,000 for the Pray Away the Gay consulting practice of her husband and the rest, that, you know, this isn't, you know, I don't know if I could fully convey this in my column, which I was trying to, which is this is part of that greater whole with conservatives. This isn't just about we want to cut spending. I mean, you know, traditional Republicans, conservatives of a more moderate bent, you know, believed in balancing budgets and keeping budgets, you know, in control. And I respect that, even if I disagree with them sometimes. This is different. This is a psychological, this is hatred. You know what I mean? This is projection and hatred that they spend money on themselves, but they don't want to, you know, everybody else who spends money is one of the other. You know, and the point that I tried to make in the column is just that it kind of really took off with Reagan, you know, get government off my back and be off your backs and welfare queen. And that I quoted in the column, the Stalin line about one death being a tragedy, but a million deaths being a statistic. They realized if they could take it away from, this is a program that gives your son health care, that, you know, or sends your son to school, or helps your neighbor when a tragedy hits them and a tornado tears down their house and turn it into a, it's government spending for other people and not you, and push it in that realm, kind of like they did with the health care bill, where they turn it into something abstract, which makes it very easy to hate. It's just a big government program. You know what I mean? It's no longer something that's actually helping everyday people. There's no flesh and blood to it anymore. And that was kind of the point. That's what they've done. But when they, but as all conservatives do, when it's them, when they're the ones who are in trouble, it's about flesh and blood and helping themselves, because then it's still important. It's just when it's about helping everybody else that they've successfully done that, and they've taken a lot of people that used to understand this role for government, and they've turned this country into something that it didn't resemble 10 years ago. I mean, when you think of that someone can sit there with a straight face and say, to get money to people who have been victims of a hurricane or an earthquake, we need to find budget cuts. You know, I mean, pardon my French, but I just feel like saying, fuck you, Eric Cantor. You know, I mean, get people money. They get, people are struggling, and get them what they need to survive, you selfish bastard, you.
There's a couple of things. There's a couple of things that your column remind me of. One, just like on an anecdotal level, there was a story, and I can't remember if this guy was in Pennsylvania or where it was. He was a Republican town supervisor, and he had cut monies for snow plowing, essentially, or something to that effect, and he. He completely had a 360 turnaround when a buddy of his had a heart attack or something like that during a snowstorm. And he realized suddenly the importance of plowing the roads. It was one of those, like, sort of like, you know, Tea Party or finally, you know, saw the light. That's a perfect example. And he at least had the integrity of saying, like, you know, I realize my mistake. It's actually, these things are important. And you don't sometimes realize that until it's yourself. The other thing that strikes me is that, and I have to say, kudos to you, because you wrote this piece on August 31st. The next day, Paul Krugman writes a story that was basically echoing yours. He called these Republicans. They have gone beyond the point of those sort of fiscally conservative types to they were full-on nihilists. And, you know, talking about Cantor, you know, requiring these budget cuts, when in 2004, when his district needed emergency funds, he was the first guy with his hand out
right.
for the federal government, voting for it, whipping for it. But now he is, you know, requiring offsetting cuts, which, of course, not only in and of itself is morally repugnant, there's also no economic sense to this whatsoever. I mean, as sad as it is, the fact of the matter is that when you have these type of disasters, putting money in there helps the economy too, because it creates
right.
jobs for people. It allows them to rebuild and so on. So this is just full on nihilism, where they're applauding essentially the tragedy that has befallen people so that they can sort of somehow reap the, I guess, electoral benefits of people being in despair.
That's it. And that's what I meant, that you're exactly right. And that's what I meant when I said that, sadly, from in the end, some of it came out right after that whole bit on Cantor. I knew it. I was searching for stuff on Cantor as I wrote it, because what he was saying, and I couldn't find the hypocrisy. And I said, okay, well, maybe he's just a jackass, but he's not a hypocrite. And, of course, the day after I wrote it, that broke, that he had asked for the funding in 2004. And just proving my point, I use Michelle Bachmann and Rick Perry, and I bring out that wonderful Joe Walsh not paying his kids child support while he's yelling at people about. And again, it's just like the social issues now, whether gay rights, abortion, guns. This has been drawn into the psychological realm for psychologically damaged people who now control this process. It is no longer a common sense. It's no longer, you know, a Nelson Rockefeller Republicans who I could respect, even if I disagree with at times, who really believed you need to hold the, you need to be cautious in moving forward with big programs. You need to keep the budget balanced as closely as you could. This is different. It's no longer about doing what's best for the economy and the country. It's about hatred, and you know that because of what they did with the debt ceiling. They didn't give a damn. In fact, they actively wanted to bring down the country. They have this hatred for everything modern, everything they don't understand, all those crazy educated people that finished high school, that's where this is coming from. And now, even if you're a victim of a hurricane or, you know, a tornado or whatever it might be, they found a way to turn you into somebody who's an undeserving victim too. It's your fault. You chose to live there, or you chose this, or you chose that. I mean, again, I've said this so many times, and I used to say this when I did the Republican sexcapades thing, but the spending has really come around to that too. If we literally could just force all these people to lie down on one big mass couch with a bunch of psychologists, maybe we could solve our political problems. But none of this is coming from the realm of logic. It's coming from hatred and projection and jealousy and all the rest. And so that's what they've done. They've effectively made it so that any spending is now, you know, it's an abstract thing that's just about big government wasting money and bad. Because, I mean, I try to think, Sam, you know, in the country we lived in 10 years ago, if someone had brought up needing budget cuts to help people that were just hit by a hurricane, I just don't even think that could have been done. And that's what's scary, is how far the envelope gets pushed day in and day out.
What do you make? I mean, I know this is obviously something that, you know, people like you and I, the sort of more riffraffy commentators, as it were, have been talking about for a long time. I mean, in 06, you know, Stephen Sherrill and I wrote FUBAR.
America's right-wing nightmare.
Which had a lot to do with sort of arguing that at the basis, the conservative movement is no longer driven by any type of intellectual principles or whatnot. It is simply a collection of psychological disorders that play themselves out. For so long, liberal commentators, the liberal establishment, liberal writers have been trying to tackle the conservative arguments on a rational, logical level, rather than right. sort of, you know, like taking them at face value, rather than sort of assessing, you know, just how legitimate they are. And now you have a guy like Krugman, who is the epitome of a wonk, I think. I mean, the guy's a Nobel Prize winning economist, who is gone beyond that point and saying, like, you know, the hypocrisy, it's even beyond the hypocrisy. It's just out and out nihilism. And do you think, I mean, I think part of the problems that we have had in terms of that have led us to a place where our government is so just completely frozen in some way, so handicapped, so paralyzed, that it has been in part because the left, and to the extent, you know, whatever you want to call them, the liberal establishment, has refused to sort of recognize this and refused. And now we see this playing out with our president, who is, you know, sends out an email blast the other day saying, "I'm frustrated." Frustrated? Are you kidding me? You know, like,
through the roof.
Exactly.
No, and you could not be more right. Actually, you know, this sort of traces, I mean, obviously I have subjects of interest. So it's not like my columns fly all over the place. I guess it was two columns ago, I wrote one where I talked about how, you know, Obama and the Democrats, and yeah, you can talk about the media establishment, the liberal establishment, the centrist DC establishment, how they take these guys seriously and think they can deal with them. And I kind of used examples from Henry Kissinger's first book about knowing when you're dealing, you know, internationally, when one country has to realize that the country they're dealing with is not, they try to do an analysis of what the other country might do rationally, but they don't realize they're dealing with a revolutionary force. To try to figure out what Germany was going to do in World War II, or what Cambodia might have done in the 1970s, you couldn't rationally figure that out because there was no rationality to it. All right, and he did that point internationally. But my favorite historian, a guy who was easily the one that led most of my thinking when I was in that PhD program, I of course dropped out of, Richard Hofstadter, who wrote The Paranoid Style in American Politics in 1964. Every single person who was interested in this should read that book. Because he talked about this, you know, he was looking at the McCarthyites and the Birchers at that time, and he talked about this exact thing, and the only thing that they had going for them back then is he said that this is a fringe group that's not in power, and conservatives reject them, you know, mainstream conservatives. What changed is they got their own TV station and their own talk radio, and they got things like that. They pushed it into the mainstream using cultural mechanisms, and the left allowed them to do it. so that these things, so that basically they've been able to recruit more adherents to their craziness, and they've been able to mainstream the ones that were always crazy that no one would have paid attention to back then. And that's what this is. This is the paranoid style. I mean, the whole point Hofstadter made is that the people on the other side do not compromise, and they can't compromise because they have this wholly conspiratorial view of the world, and they view the other side as evil. And when you view the other side as evil, i.e. me and you, you're not going to sit down with them. You know what I mean? You're not going to compromise.
Right, and you will drive this country to the brink of default on its debt, ostensibly to protect the country from defaulting on its debt. I mean,
right.
I mean, that's
the country, because that to you is the better option than handing it over to the godless communist Jew, gay. I mean, that's what we're dealing with these people, and that's what Obama has never understood. His people have never understood. A lot of these Democrats in Washington don't seem to get. You know, a lot of the media types are trying to say, well, it's just a difference in opinion. It is not. Again, we're dealing with unprecedented stuff because we're dealing with crazy people that were not in the mainstream 30, 40 years ago and rarely have gotten there in the past. You know what I mean? And so, again, to sit there and hear somebody say, you know, that we need to cut some of other budget spending to help people hit by a hurricane, to me, that is the paranoid style. You've now reached that point where the majority leader of the Republican Party in the House is essentially has such hatred for his fellow human beings that they're just an abstract number. They're a statistic, as Stalin would have said. They don't matter, you know. And that's amazing.
And Krugman makes that very point. He says there are plenty of bad things to be said about the Democrats who have their fair share of cynics and careerists. There may even be Democrats in Congress who would be as willing as Mr. Cantor to advance their goals through sabotage and blackmail, although I can't think of any. But if they exist, they aren't in important leadership positions. Mr. Cantor is, and that should worry anyone who cares about our nation's future. And that's exactly right. You're both right on this accord, and it heartens me, I guess, to a certain extent, that a guy like Krugman is you know, feels that it's necessary to talk this way. But it's unfortunate because I just don't see it amongst our the sane and rational who are fully.
You know what the problem is, Sam? I don't mean to interrupt you, but when you're talking about, you brought up the Democrat careerists or whatever, the problem is that people that do see this pretend they don't see it because they're scared. They want their careers. They like their six-figure careers and the lives they live and what they do, and they don't want to risk. If you come off as too partisan and too hating the right, that gets you thrown off of things in D.C. I know. I was banned from MSNBC for a while.
Yeah.
A bunch of years back. I mean, that's the thing. So most people aren't willing to risk that. The difference is that sometimes people like Keith Olbermann, it reminds me of him and MSNBC and Paul Krugman in the New York Times, they sneak through when they're considered to be kind of centrists. And then they become so popular, and
right.
When they head more towards being liberal firebrands, there's really nothing that their mainstream media outlets can do to stop them. There's no way the New York Times could fire Krugman. There'd be such a huge uproar.
That's absolutely,
you know, and
right.
So that's what happens, whereas I guess you and I screwed up. We let the cat out of the bag too early.
Keith Olbermann in the 2007 Keith Olbermann would have never been hired by MSNBC when he was hired, back whenever it was.
They thought they were getting the 2000 – when they hired him in 2004, 2003, they thought they were getting the guy that left in 98. It was a little bit over the top in his jokes and whatever, but basically was a center down the line guy for the most part politically, or leaned left but wasn't, you know – and that's exactly, you're exactly right. And so I think the same thing with Krugman. They hired themselves, you know, a guy that had been in favor of free trade and had been a mainstream, if slightly left economist. And instead, they got this great, proud, liberal, you know, acerbic commentator who rips the other side to shreds using his intelligence. And that's the problem. Because I don't believe for a second, some of these other guys in D.C. and New York and places, I know a lot of them, as you know a lot of them. I talk to them off camera and off, you know, whatever as you do. And I know they're too smart. I know they know better. But I think they're scared. Although, you know, hell, I just got a syndicated column. So listen, maybe you can be a crazy bastard and anything can work out your way. I don't know. But you know what? I my view, and I think yours too, Sam, has always been that I'm going to be true to what I believe and what I see. And hopefully things will work out,
right?
You know, but I'm not gonna start saying things that I don't believe and start comparing both sides as if there's any equivalence. You know, the truth is that if there's anything terrible about the Democrats, that there's a segment of them, the Blue Dogs and some others, that have gone over too far to being with the crazy right.
Right. And now, and this brings up, of course, the central dilemma that I think all of us who have these beliefs are facing, is that we have a president who almost pathologically does not recognize this. I mean, I don't know what's in his heart, whether or not he believes, you know, I can only judge him based upon what his administration does and what his public proclamations are. And so when I refer to the president, that's what I'm referring to, the icon, not the human being, because I don't know what he believes. And it doesn't matter in the end of the day. What matters is how he functions as president. And so here we are, faced with a guy, you know, even putting aside whether, you know, policy differences and putting aside, you know, what he should have done differently. He is not rhetorically recognizing this. And if you do not recognize it rhetorically, if you do not make this argument, there's no way you can go from where we are today to where we need to be, whether it's 5, 4, 10, 20 years from now. And
that's exactly right.
And so,
and you know what?
And what do we do? I mean, what do we do at this point? I mean, that's.
I don't know. I mean, look, you know, I wrote this out in an email to some folks the other day, and a listserv I'm on, I think you're on it too. Well, you know, I've come to a sad point where I realize that, and I'm sure I'll get a hate mail for this, but such is life. Where at this point, when Obama says things, I almost sometimes treat it like I used to when Bush said things. You know, I just don't believe he's going to follow through. I mean, for all of those who now are ready to kill me, I'm not claiming Obama is Bush. And in my opinion, as bad as Obama has been, and I've been hugely disappointed, believe me, he's far from Bush. But it's more a matter of, like, I don't trust he's going to stand up for his commitments anymore. I don't trust he's going to fight for anything. And it would be comical almost, like the whole Boehner-Obama thing. You know, the minute I heard that Boehner was saying, you know, you can't come here, I just said Obama's going to cave. I mean, I just knew it. I mean, how could you not know it? It's what's happened every time, and he caved. Somebody brought up an interesting point. He could have come out of here to Ohio and gone to Miami Valley and held his speech in Boehner's district. That's what I would have done.
Right.
You know, or something like that, and said, you want to play games, pal? You know, but he caved. And I just got out this email, and you may have seen it this morning, on what he's doing now with the EPA standards.
Yes.
Where with Lisa Jackson on the ozone standards, he just pushed back and said, no, we are not going to implement them. And to me, I'm trying to look at something in front of me, what was written, because of course the key line in there was the importance of reducing regulatory burdens and regulatory uncertainty, particularly as the economy continues to recover. He's still repeating their points.
Right.
It is amazing. In the last decade, we've seen the Enron energy market go haywire. We've seen what happened on Wall Street. We've seen money disappear to contractors, $60 billion in Iraq and Afghanistan. I mean, if ever you could, you know, we've seen BP and we've seen the Massey, you know, energy. And I mean, if ever there was an argument, the left could have come back and said regulation actually is what is helps the economy. Regulation is what brings standardization. It's what makes people trust things. It's what makes people believe they can invest in something and it will still be there. If anything, regulation is a good thing. You know what I mean? But no, here he is responding and repeating yet again this morning. I don't know where we are in the tar sands thing, but he's having his own former workers, people that worked in his campaign, actually a guy, Elijah Zarlin, who I know, who I've done some projects with.
He's the chief sort of email fundraiser.
A great guy. And I did some project with Elijah about 2 years ago, one and a half, 2 years ago. Some PR work, and he's now getting himself arrested over tar sands in front of the White House. I want to know. I mean, I'm almost ready to write my next column on is Obama throwing this election. I mean,
well,
does he want to lose?
Because
I don't know where we. There's no political strategy I can think of that they're doing that makes sense. I have to believe that they bet against themselves and they're actually trying to throw this. But
well,
I don't know what else.
You know, that's the thing is that one of the litany of failures, we can sit here and talk about policy failures or policy attributes that we don't like or whatnot. But, you know, the thing that keeps resounding to me and when I bring these up in different contexts, people are like, well, he told you who was going to do this. You knew who he was. He's not, you know, there's some, he's kept PolitiFact says he's kept more promises than any president. Well, the one promise that he did make that he kept reiterating, whether it was saying to members of the House, the difference between 94 and 95 and now is you got me. And we have been told by the liberal establishment and by apologists that we must keep quiet. He needs to be the adult in the room. This is going to be a winning electoral strategy, despite the fact that maybe some of his policies have cut against that in terms of creating jobs. Well, you know, this past week, there is now a plurality, 36% of overall of independents who want to see Obama stand up to the GOP. I mean, so he's losing. He is losing the political battles here, and so this strategy is not working. So even if he is at his core a corporatist and a neoliberal, one would still hope that self-preservation would take over at one point. And so at least do the dance. At least do the dance.
Right. It's amazing. I mean, like the PPP poll came out. He's now has negative ratings among women, unions, voters under 30. He's now down to a 75% approval rating among African Americans. I mean, does he think that this stuff is working? Do they think that caving on environmental standards are now going to get, at the same time, caving on ozone standards at the very same time, you're probably going to choose to go forward with tar sands? That's going to be a deal breaker for a whole bunch of people. I mean, you know, at this point, Charlie Cook is saying that looking at everything, that Obama's the underdog, that it's a Republican that's probably going to win. And the thing that just makes you want to scream is that, as we've done 100 times, just gone over, I'm not going to go into all the details about stimulus and health care and whatever, but, like, nothing happens in a vacuum. Nothing happens. You create the environment and the culture you get. The Tea Party grew out of his inaction and his unwillingness to do things and his people's unwillingness to do things. And, you know, here we are. I mean,
Even rhetorically, that's the thing that just kind of, you know, I remember watching a State of the Union address, and I can't remember exactly which one it was, but his refusal to say the words greed, his refusal to say, you know, to even make rhetorical arguments that would appeal to people, even if he was going to do nothing in terms of policy and had no ability to do anything in terms of policy, the lack of rhetorical of laying the foundation for a better political environment to in which to make these changes is not there. Now, with all that said, the never wrong pundit, this guy Lichtman, who wrote The Keys to the White House, apparently he predicted the last seven presidencies starting in 1981, has never predicted incorrectly. And he says Obama wins walking away. Now, there's a couple he has 14 keys. There's a couple where the jury seems to be still out in terms of what can happen over the next year. But, and, you know, the dilemma is, of course, that, like, I would rather see Obama, then Rick Perry, then Michelle Bachmann, then Romney, then all of these people. And I don't see any primary challenger who has the ability to beat him. I would encourage a primary challenger who would at least put into the mix, you know, even if it was just symbolic, you know, so that there's some conversation about important issues to progressives. I don't see one. And so, you know, this is the progressive liberal, the leftist dilemma right now.
Right. Yeah, I have to say, though, it's pretty funny because in a conversation that we're having, we talked earlier about you dropping on the law program and my PhD program. You know whose research assistant I was in my PhD program?
Who's that?
Alan Lichtman.
Oh, so
my PhD was at American University where I was getting it, and I helped him write his book on conservatism. Well, I helped him do research. I didn't write it. So it's funny when you bring up Alan because I've known Alan for a long time.
Well, so what does he say? He says this is in the bag.
Yeah, he is saying that, yes. My worry is the only election he got wrong was the 2000 election because he predicted Gore, and Gore, in fact, as we know, did win the popular vote. The one thing that his system seems to always get right is the popular vote. But as we know, there are things that can be done, chicanery, let's just say, and it's going on everywhere that can mess with the electoral vote.
Interesting.
So theoretically, he's been right every time, but he wasn't right in 2000, not because of him, but because of how crazy our system is. So as we know, that maybe Obama does win a popular vote, but if in the end he can't win electoral votes in Florida and Ohio and places like that, which is possible with some of the stuff you could have. I'm one who thinks that there could end up being in the next century with all the polarization, a number of divergent election results where the popular vote differs from the electoral vote. So that would be my concern with Allen's system, which has proven to be correct every time on the popular vote.
Well, we shall see. I mean, yeah, and of course the Supreme Court had a big, it was the Supreme Court. I mean, it wasn't even the electoral vote at the end of the day. That was sort of the window dressing. It was the Supreme Court choosing.
It would have never been that close, right, if they hadn't been able to suppress some votes in a key state and whatever the way
Definitely
they were
true.
Able to.
Definitely
so
true.
That's my worry if you read Ari Berman's recent piece.
I'm going to talk to Ari next week about that, actually. But Ari Berman's got a piece in Rolling Stone magazine about the Republican efforts at quashing the vote. But Cliff, we could talk all day, and maybe we'll have to do that after the program. But for now, thank you so much for joining us, as always. Wonderful. And congratulations again on the great news that you are now a massively, not even a nationally syndicated columnist. Let's be honest. When people get nationally syndicated, they can be on 20 newspapers. You're a massively nationally syndicated columnist.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it, man.
All right, folks. Cliff Schechter.
Thanks for having me on, buddy.
My pleasure. We got to take a break. When we come back, we will be talking to the not nationally syndicated. Has somebody even delved into the reality of this website? We'll be talking to Chris Rosen. Controversy never ends with this guy. I haven't spoken to him since last week. We'll talk to him in a moment. All right, we'll be right back with Chris Rosen.
Let's drill, baby, drill, not stall, baby, stall.
That woman is an idiot.
Here it is, the Republicans' health care plan for America. Don't get sick.
If you think that's a fair ad, okay, then you're a Republican and an asshole. Have at it, Hoss. Be in that party. Despicable, man.
They're the bad guys.
Analysts, taxpayer bailout.
Yeah, that's not true.
When Obama won, the reason why we worked so hard for him,
we didn't want a garden variety politician.
Taking a stand, not just cutting deals.
That's what vision is. Yeah. That's what vision is.
The Best of the Left podcast. The best of the truly liberal media. Edited, organized, and mixed. Only at bestoftheleft.com.
Christopher Rosen of MovieLine.com. Big shot senior editor, eh? Here is your theme song. You sit in a dimly lit room watching movies and you dress like a slob. Jimmy Riffle Cake's got to ask you, said, man, how'd you get that job? I said, how did you get that job?
Now, last week, ladies and gentlemen, last week I played the rendition of the Chris Rosen theme song that we normally play. Last week I played the favorable one. As I was digging through setting up the show, I found a favorable one. And I thought, I should play this one. And then Chris Rosen comes on.
And does such a wonderful
Excuse me. I'm setting up the piece.
Chris Rosen comes on.
Hold on. I'm going to mute you for a second. I just muted you.
Now I can't hear you either, idiot.
Wait a second. I muted me. Okay, that was a mistake. hold on. I'm going to mute you. I can see your mouth moving, and nobody's hearing you. So just hold on for 1 second. I just want to recap what happened last week. You can tell me that something different happened. But last week, Chris Rosen came on and suggested a Morgan Spurlock movie, the greatest movie ever sold. And I said, yeah, I've seen it, actually. Morgan Spurlock was on this program, which, you know, suggested that Chris Rosen never listens to the show. Okay, fine. Most guests don't listen. He didn't even listen on the day that he's on, which was Morgan Spurlock. He didn't remember that I must have said, hey, we just had Morgan Spurlock on. And then I said, what did you think of that movie? And he hemmed and he hawed. It was okay, yeah, whatever. And I thought, oh, Chris Rosen's actually now afraid to be critical of this movie, which I thought was, you know, a good idea, and it was okay executed, but I think it wasn't fully developed. And Chris is hemming and hawing, and I said, well, why won't you just say it? And then he breaks down and admits he's never seen the movie. So it wasn't one of those, like, I've never seen this, but I think you might enjoy it. It was, I lied. I completely lied as to whether or not I had seen the movie. And then you back that one up with a suggestion for a movie that had already been recommended on this program by a different movie reviewer.
No, that's not true. That's not true. Am I on?
Yeah, you're on.
That's not true. I didn't recommend that. I just wanted to echo that. I said, you had been talking about Doug Benson for a while. So I know
didn't
he
talk about Doug
that.
Benson since he was
you
on.
You talk about it all what the fucking time, about? Always telling me how stupid
Hold
I am.
Hold on for a second. So, hold on. Hold on. Matt okay. wants to speak.
I've been here since April, and I haven't heard you talk of Doug Benson once.
Yes, let's listen to Matt.
Whoa,
he's so intelligent.
Wow.
He's so intelligent, man. It's good to listen.
It's not a question of intelligence. I mean, it's a question of integrity.
Idiot.
It's a question of integrity. Because we're not even not only do we have to question the quality of your recommendations. Now we don't even know if you're just completely out and out lying about the whole thing.
I've lied to you before about seeing movies, Sam.
You've lied to me before about
seeing movies? We've talked about this. You've caught me in lies before.
No. You've said I recommend it even though I haven't seen it, but now you're lying
okay,
about
well,
seeing
it? No, that's what I mean. I've told you I've seen movies that I haven't seen.
Dude, you know, I got emails this week saying, Sam, is this a bit? Are you doing a bit with Chris Rosen? Like, do you guys plan this out? Because I don't know if I can trust the rest
be as
of your program.
As a band.
Like,
you, oh,
like,
please.
Like your lack of integrity is actually leeching into the entire program.
On.
And then I had someone who very sincerely suggested to me that you have a clinical, emotional, and mental problem. Like a clinical one.
Really? I'll be sure to take. I'll take them very much.
What
to
are
heart.
You doing? You're wiping off your computer. And I can see you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, it was.
He
much...
puts. A, he takes out a handy wipe and he's wiping down his computer as we're talking. Is there something wrong with you?
Who said that? Your mom?
Jesus Christ!
Is this thing on? Hello.
We're gonna have to put a poll up and see, like, you know, should we keep Rosen? I'm afraid people are gonna game it. I'm afraid you're gonna sit there and the only thing you're gonna do is get some like tech guy from MovieLine.com to put in an anonymous proxy user. And
I just want to say one thing. Jimmy Reefercake at replied me this week, and he I'm gonna read it to you because he's so important to the show. You may be a dumbass. This is to me, but Parks and Recreation is really good, and Sam Cedar can't understand. I will give you that. So yes. Thanks, Jimmy Reefercakes. Appreciate it.
Okay. So you have the stoner contingency wrapped up in support of your recommendations.
Well, I would imagine the stoner contingency is about 78% of your audience.
All right. Look, let's get to the recommendations. Unbelievable.
I am just kidding. Is this thing still on?
Do you have recommendations for this week, please?
Yes, I have two recommendations.
Wait, let me ask. Do you solemnly swear that you have seen these movies?
One of them I have, and the other one I was going to tell you just to see because I'm going to see it this weekend also.
Well, at least you're not lying about that. At least you didn't say, like, I've seen it already. Well, no. What are the two movies that you're suggesting that are supposedly on Netflix streaming or Amazon On Demand?
This one's on Netflix. It's American President, which I really like, and I think you should watch again. Okay.
That's such a crappy movie. Why do you like it so much? Why do you like it so much?
Well, first of all, because I like it because it's Aaron Sorkin wrote the script, and it's actually really smart and fun, and it's like a precursor to The West Wing, which I've been watching a lot of lately. And I know you don't want to recommend television shows, so I figured what American President would be a good rec.
You know what they should have titled that? Like the world's most saccharine movie about politics. That's what that could have been. Is that the subtitle of that movie?
It might be. That might have been the working title.
Jesus.
So people wouldn't come to mob the set while they were filming.
And it's a long weekend, too, and I might have the ability to actually watch a movie.
Why not George American President? It's great. American I'm sure your wife President. Will love it.
It will not be American President.
It That's should
like,
be American
like,
President.
You know what we should retitle this segment? Like, what's movies to watch if you're on an airplane.
I think that's a good title for this
It's funny
segment.
You say that, because immediately after Chris recommended, Happy Thank You More Please, the next day I was watching it on an airplane.
Well, that's your movie passable. Recommendations are really...
Thank you,
should
Evan.
Just be
I
either,
appreciate your
either
input.
Should you try
Unlike
and sleep,
Matt.
Should you take an Ambien, or should you watch the movie that they're playing on the
American
airplane?
American President is a great movie.
The idea that you could call that a great movie
it
is just stunning.
What's a great movie for you, Sam?
You about
anything?
The Candidate.
Okay.
How's that? The Candidate is a great movie about politics.
Yeah. I didn't say it was a great movie.
Bob
about
Roberts
politics.
Is a great movie
Bob
about
Roberts
politics.
Is not that great.
The Parallax View. The Manchurian Candidate.
Yeah, Manchurian Candidate's great. We all love that.
All the President's Men.
All the President's Men is great.
I mean, these are just off the top of my head, and I'm not a movie reviewer!
I think those are good movies also.
Those are good movies. But The American President, that's a great movie.
For what it is, it's great. You
For
don't
what
understand.
It is, if you have to qualify, what is it?
No,
what
that's
is it? Qualify. It's a saccharine, sweet,
it's
garbage movie.
It's a nice movie. But in that genre, it's great.
It's just like, I don't understand how someone actually becomes a movie commenter, a reviewer, whatever it is that you ostensibly are, with adjectives like
things,
nice for a movie.
When I recommend things that are good, you hate them anyway. So what do I care?
What?
You don't like good movies.
No. I like good movies.
No, you don't. You didn't like Toy Story 3.
I didn't see it.
Then you should.
What's the next
that
one?
Again.
What's the next one?
I didn't see it yet, but I'm really interested. I was upset I missed it in the theaters,
Hold
but it's called Win Win.
I just need a break.
What are you doing for Labor Day, Sam?
I'm going into my happy place with that. I'm just going to play that song over and
is
over.
Is your
again.
Happy place the the?
What? What is the movie? What is the movie you're going to see now?
I think you should see it too. It's called Win Win. It came out in the spring. It's directed by Tom McCarthy, who did The Visitor. I don't know if you saw that one, which was really good. Richard Jenkins was in it. And it's a great movie. And he did this. It's Paul Giamatti's in it. It's
Giamatti.
Yeah, he's like a small town, like kind of coach or whatever. And he ends up with this like runaway on his wrestling team. And it's kind of like.
Is this on Amazon or on Netflix?
No, it's on Amazon. It's on Amazon. And he ends up with like this small town runaway as like, you know, part of his wrestling team. And it's just like a nice feel good movie, probably. At least that's what it was purported as.
I mean, as opposed to American President, which is like, it really tackles tough issues.
No, I didn't say it tackled tough issues. You did. But this is a nice movie.
Would you say that American President is also a feel-good movie? Because then he's able to get together with Annette Bening and like, it all works out and blah, blah, blah.
What's wrong with things all working out? You saw the job numbers.
Jesus. Job numbers
are horrible.
Shit's
bad. Let's have a happy weekend watching shit that it lets us escape.
You know, it's Labor Day. Maybe you could have said something like Mate Juan. Or what's that Hormel documentary by Barbara Kopple? You even know what I'm talking about?
I think you might have slipped into some foreign language there for a second.
You got like this look on your eyes just like, what? Did you ever take classes in this?
Yeah.
Where?
In school.
What school? Elementary school?
Fordham University.
You took like a film class at Fordham University.
Many film schools. Many film classes, excuse me.
What did Fordham. They – what movies did they play at Fordham?
We had to watch like, you know, Big Sleep we did something with and a couple of Merchant Ivory ones for one of the classes. Bob Fosse movie, what was that? All That Jazz we did for a screenwriting class. That was good. You know, shit like that.
Unbelievable. I got Win-Win.
Win-Win, I think, is going to be good. Did you ever see The Visitor? We could add that to the list, too. You should probably see that.
The Visitor And
I don't know if
the
it's
other
on,
note I'm making is
I didn't read
do
it.
Not
I didn't look it up
let Mila on. Apply to Fordham.
No, it's a good school. She probably wouldn't get in. So
do not let Mila apply to Fordham. Fordham University.
It's a good wow. school, so it'll be tough. You know, you don't want to set her up for failure right away.
Right, right.
And let her watch Toy Story 3.
Toy Story 3. Actually, I've heard that's not good for kids because. Oh, incidentally, I watched Paul.
Uh huh. What'd you think?
That was a snooze fest. That was like the most stilted. You know, it was an interesting idea that went nowhere. It was like, it was some people who needed British financing and said, like, we're gonna make all Judd Apatow film.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, it's more like their other films, like Hot Fuzz, I guess. Which you don't like now? No one likes Hot Fuzz?
I don't even know what you're talking about, buddy.
Well, it's not, I mean, Barbara Couple documentary about labor, but I mean.
Well, I mean, you know, God forbid you should tie it into Labor Day.
Little is. There's nothing to tie into Labor Day. You know what iTunes did for Labor Day? Fucking labor movies. Knocked Up. I couldn't recommend the Knocked Up. She's Having a Baby. I'm not making this up.
Oh, Jesus. All right, Chris.
This has been fun, Sam.
As soon as we figure out how to put a poll on the blog, you could be in trouble, buddy. You could be in big trouble.
I hope you have a great Labor Day.
Evan, yes, thank you.
Good talking to you.
Too.
I love you.
Yeah. Matt, you too, Chris.
Good job.
Okay, we'll talk to you later. Oh, no, we got to play the Jimmy Reefer Cake song.
That's right. Sorry about that.
Yeah. All right, before we go... Apparently, now maybe they thought that I was off, that I wasn't working today. But we don't have a Screaming Majority song, I don't believe. Don't panic, folks, because this week's Jimmy Reefer Cake offering, I thought was quite good. He's played around with style. You'll hear some Malibu flavor in this one, courtesy of Cousin Trouble. That's right. Reefer Cake Studios is a coast-to-coast operation. And he's also given me a lyric sheet so I can understand. Jimmy Reefer Cake's got that sort of like a rapper quality where like half the song has to be about him. He nails it on a day when the jobs report came out. Zero net jobs. Zero net jobs. Now, I just want to say one word about that. What you had was 45,000. That does not include the 45,000 jobs that were lost during the Verizon strike. So, in other words, it's not. Zero net jobs. It's actually 45,000 jobs. That's not much better. You need at least 90 to 140,000 to maintain parity because the amount of people who come into the job force. But you'll hear zero because that's a more sexy number. But in fact, it's 45,000. Understand that the local governments have lost 550,000 jobs over the past 3 years. That's why we lost 17,000 jobs in the public sector. There were 45,000 new private sector jobs, and then you can basically add 45,000 to that number because that offset the Verizon strike. So there was 62,000 private sector jobs added, 17,000 public sector jobs lost. Matthew Iglesias makes the point that we've been hearing conservatives argue that every time you have government spending cut, every time you have less government spending, that explodes the private sector. The public sector has been shrinking. According to conservative movement, conservative economic analysis, that would mean that the private sector economy would be growing exponentially. It is not. The stimulus has run out, and we are seeing the implications on our economy. Austerity does not work. It's not working in Europe. It does not work here. This should be the first thing that any commentator on TV, radio, print should be discussing when they talk about this contraction. They won't be. They won't, but that's the reality of it. So kudos to Jimmy Reefercake for nailing. I don't know if Jimmy knew that the jobs report came out today. But either way, kudos for him for nailing it. Let's hear the song.
Yeah, you know what we need? We need ourselves a jobs bill. Jimmy Reefercake gearing up for the next election. I got tracks from coast to coast and add to my selection. Try a toke of this herb. It's the best I've ever tasted. We're living in a nation where everyone is wasted. Americans are not all lazy slobs. Hard-working people still can't find the jobs. Me, Obama, and Boehner on the golf course strolling. The drinks are pouring. The joints are rolling. I'll never scold Obama. I'll try some nice cajoling. When Boehner starts to cry, I'll do the consoling. Convince them to recognize a very simple need. Pass a jobs bill and tax weed. Hardworking people smoking casually. $10 billion revenue annually. Pass a jobs bill.
All right. That was exceptional. Jimmy Reefercake coming through to post a try for a jobs bill and a suggestion as to increasing our government's revenue. Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time for the better half of the program. If you are a member, you can join me there. You can become a member by heading over to majority.fm and clicking become a member. You will not only get the opportunity to enjoy the better half of the show. Today, I will be talking about CEO pay relative to their tax obligations. I'll be talking about the failure of Governor Rick Scott to prove that welfare recipients are a bunch of drug-crazed druggies just waiting to get money so they can take their drugs. And yes, fill your bathtub with the tears of Bill Gross, the CEO of PIMCO. You'll remember, I was on MSNBC with David Stockman, who said, when PIMCO shorted treasury bills, we're not going to make it through the summer. Now, he's crying into his beer because he bet there'd be massive inflation. And yet, no inflation. A couple of great stories about Anonymous. One, how they are unwittingly supporting a corporate entity. They get the same problem I do. And the other, on how they've exposed the exceptional racism in the one of the Texas police departments.
Yeah.
All that and more on the better half, ladies and gentlemen, coming up next. And you can call the program. You can IM me at Majority FM. Don't forget, donate your account. Buy your crap from Amazon through our link. We get a kickback.
Leave iTunes ratings.
Leave podcast. iTunes ratings. You can support this program in many different ways. Buy coffee from justcoffee.coop. Use the coupon code Majority. That's win-win. F. Chris Rosen, that's the real win-win. And, of course, your membership makes this show possible, whether you listen as a freeloader to the free part or whether you listen to the whole show and the better half included. Monday, we'll have a collection of some labor speeches and interesting speeches. Tuesday, we'll be back live. Expect Ari Berman and a week's full of great guests. And then I'll be live probably now until Kingdom Come. Join us on the better half now.